Hello, and you're all very welcome to episode 5 of Spraying My Mental Health podcast, an assortment of all things mental health, philosophy, idols, and inspiration. I'm delighted once again to share my thoughts and words on emotional fitness, my life journey, and the bits and pieces in between that intrigue and interest me. I kick off this episode in a bit of a challenging manner. The previous recordings were made on my behalf from a place of ease and good form. And there were components of excitement and enjoyment and putting ad hoc content together for a podcast, as it's something I've never done before. And tonight, however, there's obstacles around me that are all too familiar. Just those pillars of doubt, just the burden of sadness, which there's no real justification. Plain and simple, I am David, and I'm affected by low mood and despondency on a very regular basis. And despite the ongoing pledge to better myself and enhance my inner strength, today is a classic portrayal of the fucking myriad of unpredictability, awkwardness, and this brutality that living with a mental illness can have on someone. As they hit you like a fucking train. And I think it would be easy just to pocket my ideas and determine the colloquial inconveniences of having a shite day as a perfect excuse to remove myself from any sort of form of productivity and creativity. But I feel it's important to share the message on the podcast, as it's a podium put out there to highlight the issues surrounding mental health. So why avoid the topic when I am the topic? Even though the only thing at the forefront of my mind right now is a desire to bury my fucking head under the covers and just wait for the clouds to pass. To give you all an insight to the process of these overall feelings that immerse themselves in me, like, I was perfectly fine this morning. I slept well, I woke up to a beautiful morning, had a lovely breakfast, went to work, all is good. And about 3 o'clock, I'm in the car, and as quick as the lights turn from green to red, I'm met with all these thoughts of irrelevancy and self-loathing. And why? Well, I caught a glimpse of myself in the rearview mirror while I was driving, and I just didn't like the look of it. And that's it. That's how ruthless, that's how easy it is just to awaken the contravening patterns of play inside my head that work so fucking effectively against the positive reframing and the brain work that we try so hard to cultivate within me. So from then to now, it's been shit. It's been fucking shit. No logic, no reason. That's just the way it is. So it got me thinking again just about sort of the process of where do I go. And it's very much a circle, not a vicious circle. It's just when it happens, I have a routine as to where to go. And I'm looking forward kind of a couple of weeks after my holidays is that I'll return to counselling. And that got me thinking about kind of observations from the past and previous encounters when seeking counsel. And one of the finest observations enlightened to me in a counselling session was the fact that I start pretty much every sentence with the words "I think." And those two words, it's like they're very biased towards speculation and uncertainty about what I'm about to say. And to begin with "I think," it sets a reluctant tone from the off. It's a stance that I'm not really sure about anything, or that I truly believe in any of my statements or opinions. And in setting out a cautious stall, like, I'm inviting constraint to my confidence and me asserting them straight away. So don't fucking think too much, or don't say you think too much. And it's probably relevant to stay on a subject of counselling, as it's a good opportunity to highlight something like that, just the accessibility, like the benevolence of people who work in this area, whether clinically or by voluntary means. I mean, look, people commit to this vocation, this particular area of work, because they're interested in assisting and guiding people to progression, and, you know, people who feel they need help. I'm saying this purposely to anyone listening who at present may be low, may be lost, be overwhelmed by anything whatsoever in their life right now. And if you're unsure of what to do, if, you know, counselling has crossed your mind but you feel a bit scared, like, please don't be. Like, these people are wonderful, professionals, caring, kind, experienced. Like, he or she is not trying to catch you out. The therapist, the carer, the fucking person in front of you. They want you to progress. And it's not like the films, it's not, your stereotypical setting with a fucking inclined leather couch and a swinging pendulum with leather-bound books and a coffee table. Your fucking man in a dicky ball and half-framed glasses taking notes as you talk. It's not like that at all. Like, it's the real world. It's today. And look, there's a coaching process there that takes time. And like anything that targets results, it takes effort. But there's no shame, there's no embarrassment. Like, it's a service that's there to help. Like, I fucking love it. Like, I was reluctant at first too. It took me a long time to evolve from talking to just friends to seek clinical help. But as you may well be aware, if you've listened to this podcast before, I love getting deep and I fucking love talking about life. So again, look, if you're nervous or holding back, just baby steps, look after yourself. Pieta House Aware, the Samaritans, really good places to start. Take care of yourself, check out their websites. Stacks and shrubs and steps and ships, metal gates and empty pathways. Weeds and walkways, winter wind whistles, rusty grace and tempting dare says. Damaged decay, derelict and deep, broken crates and concrete fairways. Cranes and chimneys, clouds and cars, human traffic and sea breeze clearways. Flying fan jets, fences and ferries, silent Dublin and evening skyways. Past potential pill bag pigeons, zip up strolls and clear the head freeways. Boys and boxes, boats and bray, yellow lines restricted archways. History, hot, home and houses, red and white distinctive takeaways. Some spoken words that I wrote on the side strip of yesterday's newspaper while sitting in my car eating my lunch the other day. And that's why I'm loving this podcast. This is why I'm enjoying it, because if you follow this through on the first four episodes, you'll know I've been trumping my love of the pill bag chimneys in Dublin. I had a really detailed discussion about this, I think, two episodes ago. If you're only joining us, if you're only listening to this for the first time, go back to the start and build up a bit of context to this conversation. It would probably be the easiest thing to say. So this is why I'm enjoying it, because the podcast, it's enterprising to create a flow. It's a continuation to expressive formats such as reading and writing, which is what I love. And if I'm in a good place, like, there's proficiency, there's ideas, there's potential to art form, and that's what I enjoy. That's what makes me happy. Do what makes you fucking happy. Like, I know, this has just got me thinking now, just kind of going on from that, because I'm buzzing. I'm feeling very creative and doing a lot of reading and a lot of writing lately. So I know that if I'm not engaged, you know, with my mood, focused and aware of my mindful attentiveness, like, that's when I spiral. Like, as a guarantee, like, if I'm in pissy humour, if I'm feeling stale, feeling bad about shit in my head, feeling bad about shit in my life, like, I'm going to do shit things that are going to make me feel even more shit. Like, the simple things, like scrolling through my phone, like that mechanical numbness that parks any adherence of self-awareness and purpose. Like, we all do it. We all go a bit insta-dumb. And, like, that's just one item of proneness for me. Like, I know to carry on for that, I'll be lazy and be eating shy food. I'll leave shit lying around the house. I'll drink too much coffee. I'll watch too much porn. Like, I'll be feeling distracted from real life connection with others, and I'll be removed from, like, important presence such as that, like when I'm with Jace, and that's the fucking siren right there, like the essence of percipient distraction away from the important stuff, like paying attention to my 1-year-old son who may be curiously trying to build a fucking tower block with a pile of Lego, and I'm in the background letting these artificial boosts commandeer my attention. Like, that's when I'm fucked. Like, that's proper fucked. That's an alleyway of fucking self-destruction. And, like, that's interesting. Like, I think that particular interruption, like, when it relates to prioritising dumb shit ahead of my child, like, that's the profusion of, like, the negative onslaught upon myself as a fucking father, like, and like, I've no shame in saying, like, I have to work incredibly hard on my confidence as being a dad. Like, 6 days a week, I could be set in stone that I'm absolutely terrible at it. Like, but somehow on the seventh day, I'll find a connection within myself to acknowledge that I'm no better or no worse than anybody else who's trying to hand at this. Like, I'm doing okay. But to restate the original point on that is, like, that cradling of my inner buzz. Like, when I feel that pump, this assuredness within. Like, I'll read more, I'll learn more, I'll write more, I'll do more, I'll give more to myself, I'll give more to my interactions, my relationships with others, I'll fucking love more. And I think the crescendo of that celebration of resolve and purposefulness, that's what I meant. So, the culmination of all of that is that Jace is the big fucking winger. He's the big winner. I'm tripping up my words here, and I think I got a bit excited with that rant, but I think you know what I meant. And yeah, when I get to that moment, when that all culminates, comes together, and I feel great about myself and feel really proud that I'm doing a really good job as a dad, like, that's because of those moments. Like, I'm fucking Weetabix dad of the year at that point. And it's all down to, like, in summary, I love my son. And I'm constantly trying to better myself for him. And it's that constant search and research of that culmination of the astuteness in my roused consciousness that keeps me growing. And to know that I can find that feeling of adequacy as a dad through committing to my own enjoyment of the remedial interests that I have, such as writing and reading and doing stuff that's all around generally positive. Like, that's a really good predetermination. Like, I'm really happy to be in control of that. So, yeah, it's a circle. Do what's good for you. Embrace what's good for you. And what's good for you will embrace you. Simplicity in my philosophy on that. How to be a dad. There you go. So this week's basket of creativity from the top shelf of insanity comes to you in the form of proximity flying, wingsuit flying, which is basically, it's like a skydive, but instead of a parachute, you're wearing a wingsuit, which, how would I describe that? So the man jumping out of the plane or whatever he's jumping off will wear a suit that has additional fabric between the legs and also attached between the arms and the hips. So think Batman with the cape open. It essentially looks like a bloke jumping off a cliff with a sleeping bag on his back. Came across this a few years ago, and like, I ran 10 marathons in 10 days on a running track, and people thought I was completely and utterly off my rocker. But these guys are on a different level altogether. So it's a sport, it's a recognised sport, extreme level sport, and it became quite prominent in the 90s. There's different disciplines that, so you'll have a guy, as I said, you might have someone who will jump out of an airplane, just a sort of your generic base jump, using the wingsuit. And then you have proximity flying, which is off a cliff, and you'll sort of navigate your way close to, in proximity to the cliff. And the reason for this is to obviously stay in control and master the sort of wind channels. But obviously, like, you're literally flying on your own with just a helmet on and your arms and legs to guide you. Not surprisingly, the fatality rate for this is quite high, and there's videos on YouTube of crashes and injuries, and it's some horrific stuff that I steer clear of. But go onto YouTube and check out just proximity flying or wingsuit flying, and check out a couple of the videos. Like, it looks like a squirrel flying through the air. Really interesting, really entertaining more than anything. Not something I'll ever be trying. I looked into it a bit more, because that's what I do when I find out shit that I kind of find interesting. So the maximum speed someone has clocked up in one of these things is 396 kilometers an hour. 396 kilometers an hour. Like, that's...
what would that be? That's about...
that's about 240 miles an hour. Like, just a helmet and a suit firing off a cliff. And that was a British man by the name of Fraser Carson, who was obviously a professional athlete. Don't try this at home. The different disciplines that are in this, so there's a wingsuit base, which is off a plane, and you just use the suit to navigate yourself down, release a parachute, and you land same way you would for a skydive. The proximity flying, as I said, is sort of close to a cliff, close to some sort of high base jump. What else was there? Flocking. You work together, like a flock of birds, I suppose. You go in as a group and take your jumps together. There's artistics, which would be a bit like synchronized swimming, only you're in the air, in a wingsuit and nothing else. And this is the best one. There's a discipline in this called halo, which is high altitude, low opening. And this is when they jump from a height that is anything between 15,000 to 30,000 feet. And they're so high, they have to use an oxygen mask. That is mental. I'm all over that. Extreme end of something that's already extreme, I'm all over it. And I want to check out a bit more of that. So the record on that one was, what was it? 37,000 feet was the highest somebody jumped in one of these suits. Mental. Absolutely mental. But again, there has to be a sincerity to that. I use that word a lot just to describe disciplines and activities that require your maximum effort and maximum concentration. And something like this requires just that. You can't spoof your way through something like this. And even with your maximum effort, there's a danger there. But one thing is for certain, and again, not for the first, I'm going to refer back to my good friend who climbs all the chimneys and towers and cranes all over the world. His philosophy was, you know, any worry in the world will disappear when he's hanging off a crane. So I'd imagine it is the same story with this. If you are flying, as that chap did, at 290 kilometres an hour in the sky, pretty sure the only thing you're sort of concerned about is staying alive. And there must be an incredible buzz from that, knowing that you're living on the edge of control. So this got me researching back further, and further back to early attempts, and what I came across was one of the first birdman jumps, it was called, or wingsuit jumps, was in the early 1900s of a tailor in France who wanted to test his design, and he put on his personal birdman tunic and decided to jump from the Eiffel Tower, and it didn't work. He hit the ground head first and he subsequently died. So that was the first ever attempt, and people kept going. They found a way. So that's my tip this week. Check out proximity flying and wingsuit flying on YouTube, and most of all, check out the halo aspect of it. I'm going to go into this a little bit more in the next podcast, see what else I can dish up, but there you go. That's my toast to creativity for this week.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.